From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made in the 9th century, nearly 1,100 years ago, in the Persian city that is modern-day Baghdad, Iraq. A physician named Muhammad Zakaria Razi appears to have been the first to identify the specific problems associated with a concussion. Razi wrote that cerebral concussions were different than other types of head injuries, and he wrote that injuries to the brain, while showing no outward physical damage, could lead to a loss of certain functions. This was the early 900s. For the next 1,000 years, physicians would study the effects of injuries to the brain. You could point to an Italian surgeon in the year 1290, a French physician in 1350, a French surgeon in 1575. The point is, the idea of concussion is not exactly new. And yet for years, players in the National Football League competed without much emphasis on head injury. Retired players now claim they never knew the potential lifelong problems that could result. Well, now it seems just about everyone is talking about concussion, and especially concussion in youth sports. A new poll from the Wall Street Journal finds 40% of Americans now say they would encourage their kids to play anything but football out of fear of concussion. That's the highest number ever for this poll. And a new documentary television series looks at ultra-competitive football leagues for 8- and 9-year-olds, in which the coaches tell the players to hit the opponent in the head on the first play of the game. Knock them out, the coaches say. Just send a message. Remember, these kids are 8 years old. To state the obvious, not all coaches behave this way. Most don't. But parents might fear that their kid will end up in a league where winning on the field is more important than protecting a developing brain. We are not here to attack football this hour. In fact, we're here to look at the science, the risk, and the reality that other sports also offer for potential head injuries. We want to hear from parents. And we're going to play clips from this new show that has gotten the country's attention in just 3 episodes. First, we're joined in studio for the hour by Dr. Jeff Bazarian, the leading concussion expert at the University of Rochester Medical Center. He's part of a sports concussion practice there and often deals with kids with concussions age 10 and up. Dr. Bazarian, thanks for being here.
Thanks, Evan. Thanks for having me.
Age 10 and up for kids with concussion, how often do parents come in and see you?
Pretty frequently, more and more every year.
More compared to, say, how much compared to 10 years ago?
Well, I've only been doing this for 4.
Okay.
But in the 4 years I've been doing it, it's been exponential, the growth in the number of patients that I see. And I've seen them earlier and earlier, which means that this is on people's radar screens a lot quicker.
I wonder if we used to think that concussion meant, well, you get knocked out on a field. Most concussions don't involve losing consciousness, at least from what I understand. Is there more awareness now, and is that why we're seeing more people coming to see you?
Yeah, I think so, Evan, and that's an excellent point. It's not just losing consciousness, and you're right, that's the minority of concussions. It's also period of amnesia, you don't remember things, period of confusion, or really, really common, headache.
Okay, so what we're going to do this hour is we're going to talk about what the latest research and understanding says, what still needs to be studied. We'll answer some of your questions. 263-WXXI, 263-9994. What do you think about this new poll that says 40% of Americans now don't want their kids to play football? Is it unfair to football? Is it unfair to, you know, the kids and the coaches who are doing the right thing out there and trying to protect kids? I'm going to start with Dr. Bazarian on that question. I'm sure parents ask you, Doctor, would you let your kids play football? I know it's a hard question. I know it's sort of an unfair question, but I'll ask you anyway.
Well, it kind of depends.
Okay.
Because like any sport, it's a risk-benefit, right? There's a risk to playing a sport, and there's a benefit. So you kind of have to know what the benefit is for your particular kid. I think we kind of know the benefits a lot more than we know the risks. And the risks we're just starting to get a handle on, and I feel pretty knowledgeable about what the risks are. But still, in 2014, they're kind of murky. We kind of have some sense that concussion causes a problem early on. We kind of have some sense looking at NFL players that had a lot of concussions that then had a form of neurodegeneration, a form of dementia, that there's a problem later on. But connecting those dots has been problematic.
Let's also bring into the discussion this new show on the Esquire Network. And if you say the Esquire Network, I've never heard of it. Well, I guess the show is doing a good job of bringing attention to this network that's sort of a fledgling network, but this is a documentary-style 10-episode series. Now, they've only had, I think, 3 or 4 episodes run, and the show is called Friday Night Tykes. It's a takeoff of a Friday Night Lights, and it's been compared to Toddlers and Tiara for the boys' side of things. You've got ultra-competitive parents and kids age 8 and 9 playing football in a league in Texas, they hit each other hard with the encouragement of the coaches and some of the parents. Let's listen to our first clip, which is sort of a trailer for the show that Esquire has compiled. Now, you can't see the hits, but you will hear the helmet-to-helmet hits that these 8-year-olds are putting on each other. Let's listen.
The opportunity today to rip their freaking head off and let them bleed. If I cut them with a knife, they're going to bleed red just like you. You go out there like Junior Broncos. You play Junior Bronco football, and you can do it. If you believe in yourself, you can do whatever it is you want to do in life. Do it now, though. Do you understand?
Yes, sir.
Do it now.
1, 2, 3.
This is the Texas Youth Football Association, one of the elite football leagues for kids in America. And the 8- and 9-year-old rookie division in San Antonio features the best of the best.
Hey, give me that soft crap.
There should be no reason why y'all don't make other teams cry. I could care less if they cry.
The teams are ultra competitive, demanding commitment.
This is where you earn your play time.
Sacrifice. And intensity.
You can do this. You are stronger than this.
I'm sorry.
5 teams.
We come out screaming and yelling.
Yes, sir.
5 heated rivals.
Oh, we gotta fight. We gotta fight.
Only one can win.
You're so worried about winning that you're not playing.
I don't care how much pain you're in. You don't quit.
People, you guys forget that they are babies.
If that kid comes across, I want you to put it in his helmet. Do you understand?
Yes, sir.
I don't care if you don't get up. Let's go.
I don't care if they don't get up. Put it in his helmet. Dr. Bazarian, any quick take on that?
That's a problem. That's a problem. And, you know, I think there's two kind of controversial areas with contact sports, like football, hockey, and soccer. One is concussion. And the other is kind of what happens down the road. So what happens 10, 20, 30 years later? And your listeners probably kind of want to hear about both. And from my standpoint, most concussions kind of get better, with some rare exceptions. Most of them get better. But what the problem probably is what you're hearing on this clip here is the repetitive impacts that don't cause a concussion. And that's maybe the bigger problem for an athlete. And probably the more years that you have that, the bigger the problem is.
The shots to the head that don't cause concussion?
Yeah. And so that's really the egregious part of sports. And it really looks like the research is showing that a single concussion, most people recover fine. You can have a concussion, recover. That's probably not the problem so much. It's the head impacts on top of that that are occurring day in and day out. So this came out of NFL, looking at NFL and hockey players that died and had an early form of dementia called chronic traumatic encephalopathy. Now, you only see this in athletes who are repetitively hitting their head. You don't see this in sports where there's a concussion without that, like Australian rules football, like rugby. So these guys and gals have lots of concussions, but they're not hitting their head repetitively. And so the current thinking is that's probably the bigger issue.
Hmm. I can tell you, if you haven't seen the show, the hits head-to-head for these 8- and 9-year-olds are jaw-dropping. They are very, very intense hits, and you could hear it in that clip. Now, I want to play the second clip, which helps explain some of the rationale. You're about to hear in this clip a mom of one of the players explaining why she wants her 8- and 9-year-olds to be in this league, to toughen them up, and then you're going to hear from a coach. Now, the coach you're about to hear was recently suspended for a year. He said he went from being a guy who was looked up to in the community to now getting death threats because he's running a league that was too tough on kids. Well, you can decide for yourself. Let's go ahead and listen to the second clip. This is from Friday Night Tykes on the Esquire Network, and a parent and a coach both discussing why they want their kids hitting each other like this.
We came here because we wanted Colby to play competitive sports. We were done with the everybody gets a trophy, everybody wins, everybody gets a fair turn. We wanted him to understand the value of working hard and the reward that came with that. So we were introduced to Junior Broncos, and they're fantastic. Butterflies about hitting?
Yeah.
All right. Just hit them hard. Got to hit them before they hit you, right? Yeah.
I teach these eight-year-olds every single day. You're mommy and daddy's little boy, and they love you dearly. But when you come to that field, now you're a football player. You transform it into something else. When they put that helmet on, it's time to go to battle.
Kick butt! All day
long!
Hey, we've seen who the fastest kids are. Now we see who the meanest and the strongest are right now. Let's go right now. You understand? Here we go. Here we go. Right now.
Some kids are your everyday kids that just want to quit. You allow them to quit on the football field, it's going to be okay to quit in the classroom.
So that's his rationale, Doctor. But again, I think 8 and 9, we're not talking about high school kids here. Elementary school age.
Right. I think it's fair to point out, though, that there are some tremendous benefits to football that really are hard to teach in other aspects of life. So that working with a team, working beyond your comfort zone, you know, and I think those are. So when I talked about risk and benefit, I mean, that clip actually was good at kind of bringing that up. So as much as we kind of want to demonize football, there are some really positive aspects of it. But to get to your point, the question is, when is it really safe to let kids hit their head? And that's kind of what we're grappling with.
Yeah, and you beat me to the punch, because I wanted to set up this discussion with what has a lot of people fired up, which are this show, concussions, kids, youth sports. But then you can't let this show sort of paint all athletic associations and all coaches with the same brush. I've got a brother-in-law who coaches football. I would let my son play on his team every season. He is a great coach. He, like so many coaches you know, they coach kids to be tough, strong, to have resiliency. But they're not telling them at 8 years old, go rip their freaking head off. That's the line that I say, we're starting to lose sight of it here. You know, you're not coaching in the Super Bowl when you've got an 8 and 9 year old. And I understand you want them to be tough, and you want them to learn how to get up off the ground when you take a hit, whether it's in classroom or out on the field. But I don't want to tell a kid to rip the other guy's freaking head off or put it in his ear hole, knock him out. That's where the line is, and I'm worried that parents might think all leagues are like that. You've seen it up close, Dr. Bazarian. Not all leagues are like that.
Right. I mean, the people that come to me in the concussion clinic tell me about their coaches. I think that's probably pretty rare in the Rochester area. And I work very closely with Scott Green, who's the head coach at the University of Rochester, and he's not like that. He values every player. He wants them to go on to do things where they need to use their brains, like lawyers and doctors. He wants them to play hard but play safe. And I think that's the life lesson. And I think that's what football teaches if we do it right. Play hard but play safe. And not using your head as a battering ram.
Well, and that's the question. And we're going to get to the phones in just a minute. 263-WXXI, 263-9994. Do we know what the difference is, Doctor, between a 35-year-old or a 25-year-old who gets a concussion and an 8-year-old or a 10-year-old or a 12-year-old?
Excellent question. No. We have a sense that the younger kids take longer to recover, but we don't really know, looking at their brains, whether they have more brain injury with the same kind of hit. We have reason to believe that they would get more brain injury with the same kind of hit based on their anatomy, but we don't really know for sure.
Let's get to Mike in Rochester, who's on line one. Go ahead, Mike.
Yeah, gentlemen, let me give you my background just so you know where I'm coming from. I was in the Air Force as a medic, and I was the NCOIC of a pediatric clinic for over 6 years. And I also was a professional sports official. In other words, I got paid for 25 years to be around kids playing sports. So I'm a little concerned that we're overemphasizing some of this stuff in terms of judging parents by those clips that you just gave us. I think you would be just as judgmental if you had people teaching kids how to use guns. So I'm a little concerned about the judgmental aspect of considering parents not knowing what's best for their children.
I'm not fully following. You think we're being too judgmental toward the parents in the clip? Or I'm telling you, Mike, I understand both sides of this. I understand the parent who wants their kid to be tough, who wants their kid to learn to be self-sufficient and thinks organized sports is a great way to do it. And I happen to agree. I've got a young son, and if he wants to play football, I'm going to allow it. There's a lot of risk assessment in life, and you can get a concussion playing in the backyard. I do think there are certain lines that you cross when you start telling 8-year-olds to rip the other guy's head off. I think then you're starting to go into a different territory, don't you?
Well, I think this is all specific to the environment that they're coaching in. In other words, if you had someone at a shooting range telling someone to shoot and kill the enemy, you could be just as judgmental. So I'm just saying a lot of times this is taken out of context, and you're trying to make judgments on things that are really being taken out of context.
Well, you and I are going to disagree on that part of it then, because I will not find any scenario where a coach telling an 8-year-old to rip the other guy's head off, or let me give you another example from the show. The coach tells one of the players on the first play of the game, jump the snap and hit him in the head. You're going to get a flag, you're going to come back to the sideline, and I'm going to yell at you, but that's what I want you to do. That is not acceptable to me. There's no context that makes that acceptable to me. And when the lesson is, you know, hit in the head to these 8- and 9-year-olds, that's not acceptable to me. What is acceptable is telling kids to be tough, to get up as long as they're not fully injured. I mean, to be willing to take a little pain, to take a shot. But I think there is a line, and that's my concern, is that it's being crossed in the league that we're seeing on TV, and I hope it's not being crossed in too many other leagues. I don't think it is, though. I think a lot of leagues are above board and doing a great job. That's kind of my point. I don't want to step on your point, Mike, but that's where I am.
Well, Evan, I just want to let you know I've seen college and high school coaches do the same things with students. So, I mean, it's just a reflection of that whole concept of what's going on in football.
Yeah, I'm with you. Doesn't make it okay there. That doesn't make it okay if it's in college to say hit him on the first play of the game, hit him in the head. Didn't make it okay when the Saints were putting bounties on players. You know, I'm with you that it does happen. I'm just saying make kids tough and competitive and strong, but don't teach them that the way to do it is to actually injure them and to take them out one by one. That's the difference I guess I have. But I agree with you, Mike, that it is pervasive. Fair enough. Thanks, Mike. Thanks for the call. And I didn't mean to get on a soapbox there, Doctor. But I mean, I that's where the line is. I don't think it's healthy at least from my view as a parent, I don't want to tell my son that you can never do anything that could result in you getting hurt, because you're going to go through life without missing a lot of things there. And if that's the case, by the way, then he wouldn't also be able to play soccer, because in football the concussion risk is pretty high. But in soccer, especially for girls, but I think for boys as well, you're going to know better than I will, there's still a pretty significant concussion risk, isn't there?
Yeah, it's pretty significant. And it looks like it's a little higher for girls than for boys, which is an interesting finding. But the kind of the long-term risk of dementia, we just don't see that so much with soccer players, professional soccer players, like we have with hockey, football, boxing. So there's something inherently different about football, hockey, boxing than there is even probably than soccer.
How important is the next series of research? And I ask because that question before our show today on social media, I heard from a lot of parents who are asking, what do we know about concussions for kids who are 8, 9, 10, 11, 12-year-olds versus adults? And your reaction was, we don't know a lot yet. How close are we to seeing new research, or at least getting a firmer grip, and how important is that research?
We're getting closer. It's obviously very important. And one of the things that's really opening up the research are the availability of helmet sensors, so sensors that can actually count the number of head impacts. So it really can help us objectify how many times did Johnny actually get hit in the head versus just asking Johnny and guessing. And that is very eye-opening when you see these kind of data. We have most of the U of R football players hooked up to these helmet sensors, so they're not 7- and 8-year-olds. So it's a little different. But to actually see let me ask you to guess how many times in a season these guys, so practices and games, these guys get hit in the head.
At what level?
They're D3. It's a D3 school.
How many times in a season do they get hit in the head, the average player? 50 to 100 times maybe?
Try 750 to 1,200.
In a single season?
Single season.
Now, the severity of each hit is different.
Absolutely.
But you're saying the accumulation could have an effect that we still don't fully grasp.
And the research is actually pointing to that being the part of the iceberg that's under the water. So think about the concussion as the part sticking above. Those hits, those thousands of hits year in, year out, may be the bigger problem, which is why having 7 or 8 year olds hit their head starting at 7 or 8, potentially doing that for 20 years. So it's like starting smoking when you're 7 as opposed to starting in your 30s.
Yeah. All right, parents, I want to hear more from you. 263-WXXI, 263-9994. Vincent is on the line with us this afternoon with Dr. Jeff Bazarian. Go ahead, Vincent.
Hello.
Vincent, go ahead. You can turn down your radio in the background, by the way, Vincent. That's
my daughter's doing it.
Oh, there you go. Very good. Thanks for calling. Go ahead.
My pleasure. I had 8 concussions. And all the way through college, and they still affect me now. Also, Jeff Bazarian is a friend of mine. He did a couple interviews with me. The medical data that needs to be out there is that just about nothing a child does before puberty has any effect long term on their athletic ability to produce. So, and James Andrews, the top orthopedic surgeon possibly in the world, has said that health is the number one precursor. What Jeff is doing, what the guys are doing at Notre Dame, is unbelievably important for the health of children. I've written a book called Stop the Tsunami in Youth Sports. There is a tremendous amount of injuries happening, and Jeff is on the cutting edge of it. And I understand it becomes an emotional issue, but this guy is considered to be a national expert. And in his field, he can speak as clearly, and I've been interviewed all over the country, as anybody I've ever talked to, also with the Dr. Mike Maloney and Mark Mirabelli. These people are getting from Jeff Bazarian the top medical advice, and it's honest and it's accurate. And I implore people, especially, I still suffer the effects of my concussions, to listen to this guy very, very carefully.
Well, thank you for the call, Vincent. And Jeff, for parents who come to your practice, again, 10-year-olds and up, parents come in with all kinds of questions. What's an average situation like when you've got a parent who comes in?
The average situation is the child has suffered a concussion and is still having some symptoms. Parent wants to know, how do we get the symptoms gone so the child can return to school?
Wow.
And that's actually a big issue in the Rochester area, school. And back to the sport.
So they're missing school in some cases.
Oh, in lots of cases.
And then is there a concern that if they are back in school, that they're having symptoms of the concussion then, and it's going to be difficult to deal with certain aspects of school?
Absolutely. And probably half of what I do is guiding that return back so that they can get back successfully. I mean, it's kind of like if you sprained your ankle and we made you go run on it. Well, it's going to hurt, number one, and it isn't going to heal. So the timing of getting you back to using that ankle, to using that brain is key. So there's a lot of give and take between the child, the parent, and me to figure out when they're ready.
Is it difficult for schools because the cliche is that brains are like snowflakes and every concussion's a little different, but a student may need more time after a concussion to sort of get back into the swing of schoolwork, and it's hard for schools to either accept certain things or be fair to kids?
Yeah, schools do a pretty good job in this area. I got to say, by and large, I think the biggest problem, Evan, is that a concussion is not something they can see. So they don't have like a cast or a brace or a sling. So it's hard for them to remember that the kid who's got their head on their desk during class because they can't concentrate, it's got a problem. They're not just a behavioral issue. So that's hard. And we struggle with trying to make teachers aware of that. But by and large, they in this area, they do a pretty darn good job of accommodating kids.
And we're talking to Dr. Jeff Bazarian from the University of Rochester Medical Center. He is one of 3 doctors who have a practice on it's a sports concussion group, and they deal with sports concussions starting at age 10. Let's get to Shane in Rochester. Shane, thanks for calling Connections.
Sure, Mike. I have a question for Dr. Bazarian. I'm a hockey dad. I play a little myself, and my son is currently 10 years old. He plays squirts hockey. They're not allowed to check yet. I've watched pretty intently every minute he's been on the ice since he started playing at age 5. I haven't really seen him take too many falls that might have, you know, hit him, his head and that sort of thing. I'm just wondering, once they start hitting, what does the data show? Is there any kind of an arc that peaks or spikes once they're allowed to start hitting? And my reason for asking is, well, at some point in time, they're going to be allowed to start hitting, and should I consider steering him in a different direction when that becomes the case? Or, you know, how does hockey stack up against the other sports in that regard?
Well, the sport that has the highest concussion rate is female hockey, as it turns out, hour for hour played. My experience in the concussion clinic is that hockey players probably have the most severe concussions and take the longest to recover. I think the injuries are just more severe because the surfaces are hard, the speeds are high, and it's probably just more of a severe injury. In Canada, they don't allow checking until I think it's age 14, and that's probably a smart idea. Just want to limit the number of kind of contacts. Probably the best thing, you know, you can do is make sure your kid plays smart, plays right with the helmet, and maybe make sure that he's had, is it a he? I can't remember if he said it was
yeah,
a
he. Yeah, it's a son.
Make sure he's 10, make sure he's had some baseline testing of how his brain works. Mm-hmm. In case he does get a hit, then we can repeat that and make sure he's recovered. And this is one of the things I find with youth leagues, that they don't get the same kind of attention as school athletes do in terms of what we call kind of baseline cognitive testing, where mm-hmm. you know what I'm talking about, where you know, you can do a computerized test of your reaction time and things, and if you get a concussion, then we can make sure you don't go back to playing hockey until that's back to normal. So you can ask your doctor about having that test.
No, that's good to know, because yeah, I mean, again, the same thing in the U.S. They can't start checking until about age 14, which is basically, you know, once they're into high school. But he's on this course where he likes the sport, and we're fans of the sport, so we like watching him play the sport. But I don't want to, you know, push him down a path where he might be in, you know, real danger. But he, you know, he's a smart kid. He plays smart, and we try to be smart as parents. So it's, you know, hopefully it'll work out.
Hey, Shane, can I jump in and ask you a question?
Yeah.
You know, I heard from Dr. Steve Cook at University of Rochester Medical Center, who was talking about the concerns and the risk. And I asked him, you know, what about, you know, he's got three daughters. And I said, would you let your daughters play soccer? There's a concussion risk, as Dr. Bazarian has said. And he said, well, what if they took heading out of the game until a certain level? And you're talking in hockey about taking checking out in Canada until the age of 14. I guess my question to you, Shane, is as a parent, can you accept that until a certain level, the game has to be changed to protect kids? And can we as a society do that without seeming to be soft?
I'm actually a good person to ask, because I played soccer in high school and junior high as well.
So did I.
Understand heading. And I could see heading not necessarily being a part of the game, you know, at younger ages. I think at some point in time you do need to direct the ball with your head, but you can also teach chest traps and that sort of thing. I think a modified version of a game is fine if safety is the concern, and even just developmental stages are something that we're thinking about. We do it with every sport. We modify the rules all the time. So, you know, why not? With soccer, taking heading out. Now, my question would be, is heading the problem so much in soccer, or is it just collisions? Now, I went up for a couple headers in my day and didn't get the ball but got somebody else's head.
Yeah.
And that hurts a lot more and probably is a lot more dangerous to my head. So,
yeah.
You know, that would be a question, but I mean, obviously that's a variable that you can't control either.
Right.
So, you know, who knows? But yeah, I mean, I'm okay with modified rules for sports if safety is a concern and that's where we're going. We could, as far as being tough, let's just all agree, like, whatever.
I'm with you.
Who cares? So what? But now, from a competitive standpoint, if this isn't adopted globally, then our kids sure are going to be at a disadvantage if they aren't learning how to redirect headers into the net or to a teammate.
That's a great point.
You know, but the other kids are. I mean, not that, you know, the competitiveness is the be-all, end-all of everything, but we're already a little bit behind in soccer.
Yeah, I'm with you. Shane, that's a great call. Thanks for calling Connections. That's a great point. And when I thought about Dr. Bazarian, when I thought about changing the rules of soccer until, say, age 14 or whatever, and I think we need more research before you do that, you take soccer's out of take headers out of soccer. That's anathema to the game. But I remember playing high school soccer, and I was so bad in the air that I think I had the ball on my head twice in maybe 5 years of play, because I was so bad at it, and every time I did it, it hurt because my technique was so poor. But when you see players come in off the soccer field, often girls, sometimes boys too, is it, as Shane said, is it getting knocking heads in the air, or is it actual just headers that can cause it?
It's an interesting question, and the research is mixed. There's some pretty good studies that show heading, no problem. Some pretty sophisticated, well-done studies before and after a series of heading, no problem. There's some other studies that show might be a problem. I personally, if I weigh all those studies together, I think there probably that's not the issue, and it's more what Shane's talking about, which is the midair collisions. It looks like if you head the ball correctly and if you activate your neck muscles, you don't allow for head rotation when you head the ball, you're okay. And that's the problem. It said head rotation. And that's why some people are advocating for neck muscle strengthening in soccer to try to prevent any head rotation at all. You strengthen the neck muscles, get less rotation. So I think the jury's still out, but I think that the weight of the evidence is probably going to say it's probably not too bad. It's the collisions that are the issue.
263-WXXI, 263-9994. In studio with us for the hour is Dr. Jeffrey Bazarian. He is with the University of Rochester Medical Center, and they have a sports concussion practice that he is a part of. You got a good chance to talk to him and get his take on things. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we were hoping this hour to have a chance to talk to one of the producers or the director of Friday Night Tykes on the Esquire network that's caused such a buzz. The network has, let's just say there have been a little bit of a change of course, but we do have some sound to play for you. One of the producers on the show explains why they think it was so important to put these 8 and 9 year olds on television. It's caused a stir. You're going to hear that next on Connections with Evan Dawson. You're listening to member supported public radio, AM 1370 and FM 91.5, HD2 Rochester.
WXXI's Travel Club presents a 2014 holiday excursion sailing along the Danube to celebrate the season with old world style. Join us next December as we board a ship in Vienna, traveling through Austria and Germany, exploring castles, cathedrals, and the famed Christmas markets. Your trip includes airfare, accommodations, and meals. Early bird discounts now available. For more information, go public at WXXI.org/travel.
Welcome back to Concussions. It's Connections. I absolutely just did that, Dr. Bazarian. I just called our
come
show
Come and see
concussions.
Me in the clinic.
I can come and see you. Connections. We're talking concussions on this Tuesday afternoon. I'm Evan Dawson, and Dr. Jeff Bazarian is in studio with us, taking your questions and getting your take on whether you'd let your kids play certain youth sports. A new poll from the Wall Street Journal just out Friday says the highest number ever, 40% of Americans, now say they don't want their kids playing football out of fear of concussions. And there is a new show on the Esquire network. It's called Friday Night Tykes, and we're going to listen to right now the one of the producers on the Dan Patrick radio show explaining why they felt it was important to put these 8 and 9 year olds on television.
I know everyone's comparing it to toddlers and tiaras, and you know you did it as well.
Yeah.
I'm not sure the comparison is really fair in terms of we're trying to create something sensational. Obviously, you want to create compelling programming, just like you want to do on the radio and stuff. But toddlers and tiara is sensational programming. You're looking at a fringe, a fringe activity, and you're showcasing it because you know it's extreme, and you're trying to create shock value and for entertainment value. I'm not sure this falls under that category. There aren't tens of millions of kids in America, signing up for youth beauty pageants, but there are tens of millions of Americans, American kids playing youth sports. By far, it's the number one extracurricular activity. It dominates, the kids, life outside of school. It's worthy of a conversation to find out, is what we're doing good for our kids or is it bad for our kids? I don't think it's sensational to ask the question, and this is what I think the essence of the show is. Mainly, how should we be raising our kids?
Yeah, I don't necessarily disagree with that. I think that this show has caused us to look very seriously about some of the more extreme leagues, very young kids playing sports at a level with parents and coaches telling them to hit each other in the head. The difference is most leagues, I don't think behave that way. And as I said earlier this hour, I have a brother-in-law who coaches football and is a tremendous coach who coaches to the max with these kids to get the most out of their ability, but he's not telling them to go hit the other kid in the ear hole. And that's the difference. I think it's good to have the conversation, but let's keep it within the competitive side without veering toward the concern with the injuries. Let's get back to the phones, and we have Linda on line 3. Linda, you've been waiting. Thanks for calling. Go ahead.
Oh, let's see. I have a 9-year-old grandson who plays hockey, and he had a concussion in the fall during practice. None of the coaches saw it happen, and even his mom didn't see it happen. You know, it wasn't a game, so his mom wasn't watching quite as intently as she might normally. And he got hit really hard, according to one of his teammates, and went down hard. He got up and, he wanted to keep playing. And just like you were talking earlier, be tough, get tough. Everybody wants their kid to keep going and take the bumps and bruises. In this case, he shouldn't have kept going. Luckily, it didn't lead to another concussion. He didn't get hit again, but that's pretty frightening that he kept playing. And it wasn't until after the practice that his mom had noticed he looked kind of tired on the ice. But then, he was showing some symptoms of concussion. He obviously didn't get knocked out or vomit or anything like that. But anyway, the pediatrician, he went and had the testing, and the pediatrician said, yes, you have had a concussion. And they did the protocol of no sports and no brain activity, et cetera, and being checked again before he went back to hockey. And he's been back in hockey, and he seems fine to everybody. Except back, a couple weeks after the incident, his teacher did tell his mom that he noticed some behavior differences. Just something was different about him. And they went back to the pediatrician. He got checked again. Nothing showed up. The pediatrician said, he really seems fine. It might take a little while for it to completely clear, but that was, I think, before the Christmas break. And then after the Christmas break, sometime in the last, month, she checked with the teacher again. And he said, yes, he's still seeing that difference. And, nobody at home is seeing the difference. But there are two issues. One, the child falls, nobody sees the concussion. He's only 9, so he doesn't know the danger of concussion. He keeps playing, and that's a huge danger. And then two is, after all this, he's been checked out now 3 or 4 times by the pediatrician.
Right.
And the teacher's still saying this kind of vague, he's seen some differences. It's kind of vague. So, my question is, what is there more that can be done? He's already gone through whatever the testing is. He didn't come to your clinic necessarily. He didn't, obviously. Maybe the pediatrician thought the concussion was fairly mild. And actually, that is another question. Is a mild concussion, can it lead to the same kind of problems as, mild meaning he didn't pass out, didn't get knocked out, and he didn't vomit.
And Linda, you've put a lot on Dr. Bazarian's plate.
I'm sorry.
No, that's okay. That's okay. Let's pause and let Dr. Bazarian jump in here. Go ahead.
Good. Great question. And what the fundamental issue with Linda's grandkid was, how do you diagnose a concussion? And what in 2014, we really don't have a good way to do this. We have what we observe in the athlete, or we have what the athlete tells us. And neither of those are actually very good at predicting what's going on in the brain. And so that's a problem. And I and others are working on a better way to diagnose this with blood tests and imaging studies and things like that. But if you leave the diagnosis up to an athlete who may have a brain injury or someone who may not be paying attention, we're never really going to be able to diagnose this accurately.
And Dr. Bazarian, can you take us through, if a parent comes in, or if Linda, for example, brings her grandchild into your practice, what's the battery of tests or steps that you take?
Well, there's two issues, Evan. One is recognizing the concussion's happened at the time, which is much harder than me seeing him in the clinic a few days later. So at the time of the injury, you've got 10 minutes to decide whether the behavior between the hit and you seeing the athlete represents concussion. And Linda's right. If they're knocked out, that's pretty easy, right? That's a concussion. But if they're not, how do you decide? If they're not confused, how do you know if their behavior? Is it different from a hit? Is it different because they've been skating for 3 hours? Are they dehydrated? Are they sleepy? It's not easy. Now, when I see them in the clinic a week later and I hear what their symptoms have been over the past week, then it becomes a lot easier to put it together. So if they say, oh, I've had a headache every day, the lights bother my eyes, I can't concentrate, I'm nauseous, then those are all really consistent with concussion. Now, what Linda's telling me is I don't really know, based on this, whether the behavior changes witnessed by a teacher but nobody else, whether that's a concussion thing or something related to who knows what, sleep deprivation, who knows what, stress. So it gets tricky, and the reason why it's tricky is without knowing at the time of that injury, whether there was a concussion or not, makes everything else more complicated down the line. So here's Linda a couple of weeks later trying to figure out, is he having trouble in school because of who knows what, or was it a hit during hockey?
Yeah. Linda, does that at least get at some of the frustration? Anything else you want to add here?
Well, I would just add that, you know, he definitely, his mom noticed, and that's why she took him straight to the pediatrician. As soon as he got off the ice and she talked to him, she could tell that he was not normal, and she took him straight to the pediatrician.
Now, there are some tests we can do in the office to try to verify that, and it's mostly physical exam tests. So there's some things that go a kilter with the brain that you can pick up in the office that you can say, oh, yeah, you've had a concussion.
In your office or a pediatrician's office?
Well, in my office, because it involves kind of complicated examinations of the vestibular system and how the eyes move around. I mean, it's not something a pediatrician couldn't do, but it's just they probably aren't used to doing it.
And Dr. Bazarian is not here to advertise his practice. He probably has enough business, but I do want you to let you know, Dr. Bazarian, let our listeners know, if they do want to contact this sports concussion group, how do they do it?
Good idea.
Okay. They're going to call a number that I have to look up on my
phone. Oh, okay.
Can I give that?
Yeah, please do. Oh, and Linda, thank you very much for the call. And I know there's a lot of people in her category as well who just may have questions. So, again, Dr. Bazarian's here to lend his expertise, but I do want people to know that if they want to contact the sports concussion practice.
So this is the sports concussion practice, University of Rochester. The number is 585-275-5321. 585-275-5321.
All right, let's get back to the phones. Bill in Rochester. I'm with Dr. Bazarian. Go ahead, Bill.
Hi, good afternoon, gentlemen. I'm Dr. Bazarian. We're in the early stages of starting a hurling league, the Irish sport of hurling. And we're trying, we're just setting up some protocols and things of that nature and listening to your program, which has been very interesting. And I kind of tuned in a little bit late, so if you already answered this, I apologize. I guess what I'm wondering, is there any training that coaches or referees can go to locally so that they could spot something like that, spot an injury and, you know, help, you know, kind of facilitate someone not going back on kind of the Linda's point, going back on the ice or, in our case, onto the field with a possible concussion? Is there any resources that are available to us?
Yes. The New York State Brain Injury Association has all kinds of stuff online for coaches and trainers. And I think if you just Google New York State Brain Injury Association, also the Centers for Disease Control. So those two websites have tons of videos, handouts, pocket cards, so that trainers, coaches can better recognize and manage acutely concussions.
Wonderful. And are there any certification programs or anything like that, or is that, you know, basic first aid, that kind of thing?
No, but that's an excellent point, and there have been many people who have been advocating for that. It would be helpful for athletes, parents, et cetera, to know which providers kind of are up to date on concussion management and which maybe aren't, because this field moves pretty quickly, and I think you bring up an excellent point, but that is lacking. So I'm going to continue to push for that, and thanks for your help.
Thank you, Bill.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for the call. So, Dr. Bazarian, give us a sense if the research and if our ability to diagnose improves in 5 to 10 years, what do you think a concussion test will be like that it isn't now? What will be easier for you or more effective? Will it be more machine tests or easier ways to diagnose? Is there any way to do it, or is this always going to be a great challenge on the medical side?
Well, there are several very exciting things out there. One are blood tests, where you could just do a finger stick blood test right on the sideline.
And how does that work?
After a concussion, there actually is a little bit of damage to some of the cells in the brain, and some of the proteins that get released cross over into the blood, where you can actually measure them, and they show up there within minutes.
Wow.
So, you know, we just published a study where we did this on players in Rochester in Germany, and we don't have the device to prick the finger, but there's several groups working on them. They look like blood sugar tests. Prick someone's finger, put a drop of blood on there, boom, you have your answer.
And that should be reliable enough, hopefully down the line, that we're going to see it become pretty standard.
That's the hope. And mm-hmm. there's pretty good evidence that there would be one or more blood tests that you could do that. There's some other things like sideline testing you could do right there in the field to see whether someone's brain is working like it should. But those are a little more complicated to use. Mm-hmm. And then there's a device that looks like a portable EEG that you could put on someone's head, hooked up to a thing that looks like an iPhone, have someone close their eyes, and in a few minutes you can tell whether they've had a concussion just based on their brainwave activity.
And that's coming.
That's pretty far along in development, actually.
Wow. Wow. And so I imagine your practice will feel a lot more, well, like you said, I mean, we're still needing to move the ball forward when it comes to understanding to diagnose. And if we're going to get better at diagnosis, that's a huge key to this, I would think.
Absolutely. And finally, the head sensors. I think that the Sports Legacy Institute has just pretty much said that they're going to certify all the companies that are producing these helmet sensors because everyone's got one, Reebok, Nike. And every family's going to have an iPhone that says, Johnny just got hit 6 times. What do I do with that? So that's coming too. And knowing how many times your kid got hit playing football or soccer and what to do with that information is going to be really helpful in managing these kids.
A few minutes left with Dr. Jeff Bazarian from the University of Rochester Medical Center and their sports concussion practice here on Connections. And we've got Julie in Rochester on the line with us now. Hi, Julie.
Hi. I had a question. My son had a closed head concussion, and it lasted for like a year. And his ears, his eyes hurt, his head hurt, and all that. I took him to multiple doctors, and he had CAT scans done, and they couldn't find anything. And now it turned into mental illness.
Okay.
So I don't know. I don't know if the thing was connected, the head injury.
That's,
that made it happen, or I'm not sure.
That's a great question, and it's often really hard to figure out. We do know that people that have a family history of anxiety and depression or have a little bit of anxiety and depression themselves would be more likely to have that after concussion. So it can definitely happen. If you've got a little bit of that lurking in your genetic past, getting concussion can unfortunately bring that out. What we have found is the quicker we treat the concussion and get the athlete better, the less likely that is to emerge.
So it's too late for us, I guess.
Well, to have quick treatment of the concussion, unfortunately, yeah.
Well, I wish you the best for your son.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks, Julie. Thanks for the call. That is one of the tough scenarios that, unfortunately, like Dr. Bazarian said, so hard to fully understand all that goes into certain injuries or illnesses. I want to make an important point here after getting a comment via Facebook this afternoon. It comes from Pam. She said, I don't want my sons playing football either, but you can get concussions from a variety of sports, and we've seen kids who have concussions from many different activities. I think the biggest problem with football is the culture and the thought that a concussion is no big deal. We don't send athletes back to the playing field after they have torn their ACL, but for years we were sending them back in minutes after they sustained a concussion. That's a very important point from Pam, and in the run-up to the Super Bowl, I heard ESPN personalities essentially joking about the fact that if you get a concussion in the Super Bowl, there's no way a team doctor is going to agree that it's a concussion. They're going to send you back out there. Mike Greenberg's joke was if you come off the field and the doctor says, what's 2 plus 2? And you say green, they're going to laugh and say, close enough, and get back out there. And I understand that maybe that would be true in the Super Bowl and everybody wants to play through an injury. But I think we have to change the culture that says a serious head injury because you can't see it, like a cut or a broken leg, just because you can't see it doesn't mean it's not real. That has got to change.
That will change, and soon we will see it. And seeing is believing. Unfortunately, we are visual creatures. So very soon, you'll be able to take that player and prick their finger or do some kind of sideline test and say, see this? You've got an injury.
And that's going to change. I think that will really finally change things, because I think there is this stigma that you can't see it less real. And you've seen that for years.
Absolutely.
As we get ready to wrap up this discussion, I think I'll give you one tough question, but I'll ask you anyway. The fact that you've got team doctors employed by, in some cases, professional sports teams or employed by leagues, is there an incentive for a team doctor to report to the coaches that the results are different than what they are, simply to allow the player to keep playing? And does that have a conflict of interest?
That's not a hard question, because there is a conflict of interest. Okay. And I think that that's a growing recognition. The NCAA just tackled this. And I think, you know, now the NFL has to step up to that. And they've gone the extra mile hiring independent neurologists. But I think as long as the trainers are paid for by the team, that's a conflict of interest. You know, I think that you're right. They're more likely to downplay a symptom that is potentially concussion related to get the athlete back into the game. And I know that that needs to be changed if we're going to protect the brain health of these athletes.
I've got about a minute left with Dr. Bazarian. If you're a parent and you've got questions, you don't want to take them to the doctor unless you really feel like there's a good reason, or you may worry about the cost of something. What would you say to parents who may have a 10, 11, 12-year-old, and you're worried about some physical signs or some indicators that there may have been something that happened? You don't know if it was a concussion, but you want to find out, but they're hesitant to call a practice like yours.
Well, sometimes you need to go through your pediatrician, so I wouldn't want you to bypass that route.
Right.
But I think in general, if your child is not back to where they were in a week or so, you should be seeing somebody who knows something about concussion. About 80% of kids will be better by a month, but we kind of know that at a week. So if the kid's not on the road to recovery by a week or so, start finding someone who knows something about concussion in your area.
And a list of 5 or 6 quick symptoms to look for.
Trouble concentrating in school, headache, sensitivity to light, sensitivity to noise, irritability.
Okay. Great stuff this hour from Dr. Jeff Bazarian. I know you're going to keep us up to date with these testing. When you talk about the finger prick and the blood, and when you talk about some of the really revolutionary changes coming, if it's not that far away, people want to hear it. So we'll be excited to have you back to talk.
Look forward to being here, Evan.
Thank you, Dr. Bazarian.
Thanks a lot.
Really great stuff from him this hour. And again, he's with the Sports Concussion Practice through the University of Rochester Medical Center. We thank you for your calls and your contributions. Couldn't even get to all the calls this hour, and that's just an indication of the interest in this. We're all trying to do our best to raise kids who are strong, tough, but not put at undue risk. That's the real question here. And we're all going to keep that discussion going forward as we continue on Connections and future shows. Thanks for joining the conversation. I'll see you the rest of the day on Twitter and Facebook. Right back here tomorrow at noon. Have a great day.